Report.
I'm holding on page Samach Gimel in Sanhedrin Ois Kuf Lamed Tes. We started learning yesterday a number of statements by Rabbi Elazar. The first one of them had to do with what we had learned about a person teaches Torah or doesn't teach Torah to a Talmud. We talked about teaching Torah to a Talmud. Then we have Rabbi Elazar said that a parnas who leads the community properly, then he'll be zecha to lead them. And then we went into a number of other memories of Rabbi Elazar. So now continuing with that chain of them, the Gemara says, "Va'amar Rabbi Elazar, kol bayis she'ein divrei Torah nishmoyin bo b'layla." Any house where words of Torah are not heard in that house at night, eish echlatoi, then fire is going to consume that house. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, kol choshech tamon spunav, all darkness is hidden away, is concealed for his hidden ones, meaning we're talking about the darkness of night, a fire that does not need to be fanned is going to burn it. Means, in other words, it actually says you're supposed to have matzpunei haTorah. The secrets of Torah should be being learned at night. And now it's tomon litzpunav. It's concealed from that spunav, and it's not being used for Torah. So therefore, tachleu eishle nupach, a fire that does not need to be fanned, meaning the fire of Gehenim, is going to consume it. Yeras sorid ba'aloi. It's bad for him that there's a remnant in his tent. Pashut Pshat is, the context is that one of Eiv's friends is telling him about the fate of Rishoyim, that they're going to end up being completely destroyed in this world, and all they're going to have is darkness and being consumed by fire, and even the remnants of them are going to be miserable. But now the Gemara is taking it in the sense that we're talking about somebody who, again, there's no tspunav, there's no hidden Torah in his house. And therefore it gets burnt. Yera sorid ba'aloi, and ain't sorid el tamad chacham. The word sorid over here, a remnant, means a tamad chacham. Shenema, as we find a pasuk of asridim, asher Hashem korei, among the remnants to whom Hashem calls, which refers to the tamad chachamim, that Hashem calls to them and they call to Hashem through learning Torah. Really, we have davening as us calling to Hashem, learning Torah as Hashem calling to us. So therefore, asher Hashem korei means people who learn Torah. Why do we call them Sridim? For one thing, because, you know, we're going to talk about later in the Perek, for example, there were times in Jewish history when the entire people were Tamar Chachamim. First of all, we're going to have the example of Chizkiyahu later, and in Chizkiyahu's times later on in our Perek, in the 40 years in the Midbar, everybody was learning Torah because they had nothing else, they had no jobs and no farms and whatnot. So therefore, nowadays, not everybody, unfortunately, is a Tamar Chacham, therefore they're like a remnant of what was. Also, the Ramban points out the Shurdash Sin Reish Dalad means somebody distinguished. In modern Hebrew, you have the word Misrad, which means an office. In Torah, you have the Bigdei Asrod, which it actually explains in a few places. It does not mean the Bigdei Kahuna, but the Ramban says it does. It means the distinguished clothing. So therefore, the Talmud Chacham are called Sorid for the fact that they're distinguished. Now, what's going on over here with why is this house getting burnt by fire? And why does there have to be Torah at night? Marsha says, first of all, okay, so the Balabas we're talking about over here is not a Talmud Chacham. So by day, he's busy, he has a job. But by night, at least, he should be learning. So if he's not learning by night, then there's a problem. Also, maybe he is learning there by day, but by day, you may not realize it because there's a lot of noise. There's a lot of noise in the streets and everything. At night, where it's quieter, you should be able to hear a sound of Torah from his house. So if not, then it shows, Yera sorid ba'aloi, he doesn't like, he's bad in his eyes, the concept of learning Torah, so it gets burnt by the fire of Gehenna. Meaning, in other words, Marshall says, the Torah itself is compared to fire. So if he had learnt Torah by night, then the fire of Torah would protect him from the fire of Gehenna. Now that he doesn't, then therefore it gets consumed by that fire. In addition, there's also the point, Yun Yaakov points out the Torah is also compared to water, so the water puts out the fire. But instead, there's no water of Torah, therefore there's no fire. The Gemara talks about in other places about the importance of learning Torah at night. The Gemara even has the expression that the moon was created only so that we should have the ability to learn Torah by night by the light of it. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Talmud Torah, that a person learns most of his chokhmah of Torah by night, because again, by day a person is busy and there's other things claiming his attention, but by night is the time to do it. The Maharal gives a whole explanation of along the lines of that the daytime is a time to accomplish things. The night is like a time of nothingness. So therefore, that time of nothingness has to be filled up with Torah, and if not, then the nothingness of Gehenna comes and consumes it. The Rabbi Elazar, further Rabbi Elazar says, Kol she'ein mahaneh tamid chachamim min chosav, a person who does not allow tamid chachamim to benefit from his nechosim, he will never see a simen bracha. Meaning, in other words, like this, we have, for example, Eitz Yosef points out, we have Gemaras in other places that talk about take of the Talmud Chacham in bracha. As soon as the Talmud Chacham comes to a place, then bracha comes with him, as we find by Lavan with Yaakov, as we find by Potiphar with Yosef. So now you have a person who does not want to benefit Talmud Chachamim from his property, so he's not going to see that simen bracha. Shenema, this is another passage where we see the word "started" used to refer to a Talmud Chacham. Shenema, also in that speech in Iyov, you have another passage, Ein started la'achloi, there's no started for his food. Therefore his goodness will not be able to be chal, will not be able to come into effect. And again, in sorted Talmud Chacham Shenema Vasuidim Asher Hashem Kore. So in other words, he's not in sorted la ochle, there's no sorted, no Talmud Chacham eating from his food. Alkain, therefore, la yochel tovay, therefore his goodness is not able to be chal, and he doesn't have a simen bracha. So now Maharsha says again, we're talking about somebody who himself is not a Talmud Chacham. He himself, maybe he doesn't have the ability to learn Torah, like we talked about yesterday. Not everybody has the head for learning Torah, at least to the extent that they should, maybe. But at least then, why is he supporting Talmud Chachamim? If he's not even doing that, then he doesn't get a simen bracha. Eitz Chaim he l'machazikin ba, so he has to at least be l'machazikin ba in order to get that Eitz Chaim and in order to get that bracha. As far as the part about not learning Torah at night, by the way, it's Yosef also brings a point, and various other Mephoshim bring the idea nighttime is also a time when there are dinim and gvuras out and about. So therefore, again, a person should counteract that with learning Torah, and if he doesn't, then that gvura, which fire is a symbol of gvura, gets him and gets his house. V'amar Rabbi Elazar says another thing we can learn from that pasuk Ein Sored La'achloi is Kol She'ena Mashayach Pas Al Shulchanai, a person who does not leave over bread on his table, Ena Roya Simen Bracha La'olam, will never see a Simen Bracha. Shenema, the same pasuk Ein Sored La'achloi. Here we're taking the word Sored in the simple sense to mean any leftover. There's no leftover of his food. Al Kein Lo Yochel Tovay. Therefore, goodness is not able to come on him. So the Gemara asks, is that so? Well, Amar Rabbi Elazar, doesn't the same Rabbi Elazar also say, Kol Mashayach Psisim Al Shulchanai, somebody who leaves over pieces of bread on his table after the meal, Kilo Oivid Avodas Kechavim, as if he's worshipping Avodah Zarah, because he's doing it for, it's like he's leaving it as a korban for Malachim or Shadim or what have you. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Ha'orchem La'gad Shulchan, the Navi describes people who set up a table for God. God means good fortune. Like Vatermaleya Bog God, like Leah says, good fortune has come when God was born. So Urcham like God Shulchan, people who set up a table for the Malach or the Mazel or whatever of good fortune. Vamamalim Lamani Nimsach, and people who fill up libations for Mani, which is the name of another Geshke. The point is, in other words, so we see. Now, Mr. Rabbi Elazar is saying, leaving over pieces of bread on the table as if like they're going to be for the malach of good fortune is like worshipping Avodah Zarah. And the answer is like Kasha, how do you shlema b'hadei, how do you shlema b'hadei? It depends whether there's a whole loaf together with it or not. Meaning, Rashi explains that when is it also, you have after the meal, there are pieces of bread there, and then a person specifically brings a whole loaf of bread and puts it over there. So why is he doing that? It makes it look like he's offering it as a korban to the Geshke God. As opposed to if there's no whole one with it, if there's just leftover pieces of bread, then it's good because those are available for the poor people that now he can offer it to them if they come in. Rashi mentions but rejects a gerusa over here, or God de la Vese, this is the good fortune for his house, meaning in other words, Rashi doesn't hold there's any such distinction. It's strictly a distinction between whether he puts a whole loaf together with the pieces that are already there or not. And in Shulchan Aruch, that's how it's in fact brought. On the other hand, the Yad Ramah does have that girsa, and he says, when would it be a problem if he puts bread there, and he says specifically this is for the mazel of the house. If he doesn't, then the Yad Ramah says it wouldn't be a problem. So he does have that girsa, but again, most of the Rishonim do not, and in Shulchan Aruch it's not brought that way. Then V'omer Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar says another thing. Kol ha-machlif b'diburay, a person who changes his words. So Rashi says it means that he disguises his voice so he won't be recognized. The Meiri explains it means partially that he doesn't keep his word. He lies. Anyway, ki ilo oved avodah z'chavim. So the person is as if he's worshipping avodah zarah. Why? Ksiv hacha. You have when Yaakov does just that. He disguises himself and he makes himself appear like Esav. Now in that particular case, he was doing it at Rivka's instructions, so there's nothing wrong with it. But ordinarily, a person would do like that. Yaakov says that if I go and Yitzchak is going to realize that I'm pulling a trick on him. Then he says I'm going to be in his eyes like Nisatea, meaning like a trickster. But that's what is that word? You have a pasuk where the Navi describes avodah zarah hevel hema masa tatuim. It's vanity, it's emptiness, it's matters of tatuim, of misleading. So Yaakov is afraid that that Yitzchak is going to think that I'm misleading him, and he's going to think that I'm acting in a way like an ovid avodah zarah. What's the connection? Marsha says chosamish shalak kodesh baruch hu emes. It is true, but more to the point is just that emes is a tremendous klal in keeping Torah, and sheker is the opposite. So now when machlet b'diburi, and he tricks somebody else with his voice, so it's as if he's worshipping avodah zarah, which is the ultimate misleading. Marsha brings in this connection, an interesting story from the Sefer Ikrim. He says one time there was a guy with an enormous amount of Averis, and he'd stolen and done all kinds of things. He comes to a Chacham to ask for a way to do tshuva. But he says to the Chacham, I can't really, if you're going to tell me a whole bunch of things I need to do, then I can't really do that. Give me one thing that I should that I should focus on, and I'll focus on that. So the Chacham tells him, so then accept on yourself, you're always going to say the emes. Okay. One day, time passes, and one day he decides, you know what, I'm used to stealing, it's given me a nice parnasa until now, let me go do that. As he's on the way, he meets up with somebody, and the guy asks him, so where are you off to? Wait a minute, I have to tell the emes. So he says, I'm on my way to rob people. Then he passes by, then he meets up with another person, and the same thing. Now he starts thinking to himself, wait a minute, now if I actually carry out the crime, there are literally two aid him against me that both can testify that I admitted to that I'm going to do it. I better not do it. So that held him back from committing that crime, and over time that gradually got him complete tshuva by the fact that he knows he always has to tell the truth, and therefore he can't get away with any of the things he was getting away with until now. So we see, in other words, that MS is a tremendous way of a person getting to great heights in Torah and in mitzvahs, and sheker is the opposite, and therefore we're saying over here that a person who acts in a lying way, then it's as if kilo or a bit of a desara. There is also the point, of course, that chosama shalakadosh baruch hu emes, and avodah zarah is the polar opposite of that. In fact, that pasuk hevel hema masa tatuim, it's in Yirmiyah, he's talking at some length about the foolishness of avodah zarah, and in that same section he contrasts it with v'ashem elokim emes. V'omer Rav Elazar says another thing. Lo'olam havik kval v'kayim. Always be kval, and you will last. Kval literally means dark. So it means, in other words, be on of. Don't put yourself forward. Make yourself more on of, and like in the dark, like holding back. Go. Maharshal says like as if you're going in a dark place rather than showing off in front of people, so they don't get jealous of you. And that way, v'kayim, and that way you'll last a long time. You won't be affected by other people's jealousy and ayin hara and whatnot. Omer Abzera, and Abzera says, Afanan Nami Tanena. In fact, you have a Mishnah that bears out that point, top of page 126. Afanan Nami Tanena. In fact, we have a Mishnah that bears out that point. We know there's a concept of tzaras of houses, and depending on what happens with the tzaras, the house may have to be, some stones may have to be taken out of it and replaced, or even the whole house may have to be demolished. But One of the dinim that applies to tzaras is it has to be that the tzaras should be visible in the natural light that comes in through the windows of the house. So Mishnah says, bayis ofel, a dark house, if you have a house that doesn't have natural lighting, ein poschen lechalonis ludus nigoi. You don't cut open windows in its walls so that you should be able to see the nega. You say, well, if there's no natural light in this house to be able to see the nega, then that's it. It's not considered a nega, and we don't worry about it. So we see that because the house is kval, because it's dark, and it doesn't have windows, therefore v'kayim, the house continues to last, and it doesn't have to be torn down because of the tzaras. So shmam, you know, that proves this point. V'omer Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Elazar says one last thing. Kol mistakel be'erva, anybody who gazes at erva, kashtein in eres. His bow gets shaken loose. Now, what does that mean? So Rashi says two explanations. First of all, first of all, what's mistakel be'erva? So Rashi's first explanation is Pashat, a man looks at the erva of his wife. So then, kashtin in eres, his bow, which is to say his aver, ninar, the nin eres, is shaken from its power that he ends up being impotent and he's not going to be able to have children. Second explanation, Rashi says, is I'm a stackle, doesn't mean he actually looks at it, means he thinks about, he's thinking and fantasizing about an aches ish. And then according to that, kashtin in eres would mean the strength of his arm. So his physical strength, nin eres gets shaken out and gets weakened. Marsha points out why does Rashi have to mention Eishes Ish? Why not any other Arayas? And the reason is because the expression over here is a mistakel be'erva, so it suggests one particular erva which is very, very common, namely an Eishes Ish. There's a whole lot of married women out there. Why the expression mistakel? As Marusha says, according to Rashi's second explanation, the vote would be, it's not just if he looks at it, just even the fact that he's thinking about it and fantasizing about it and causing himself a tishui, then also kashtan in eres, and the result is that the kashtoi, also meloshin tishui, nin eres gets shaken out and becomes unavailable to him anymore. So basically, in other words, he overindulges himself in that kind of thing, in arousing himself and being machatz meladas, and therefore it has an effect on him in the future of being able to do such things. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Eria Se'er Kashtecha. The simple meaning of the pasuk is speaking to Hashem. Your bow is openly revealed, like your bow with which you punish the Rishayim. Area is uncovered, seir, and is aroused to punish the enemies. But here the Gemara is taking it in the sense area because of erva seir kashtecha. Therefore, your bow will be seir, will be nin eres, will be shaken out and weakened. Okay. Now back to topics of Tchias HaMesim. After this whole digression of Rabbi Elazar's various memories, the Gemara says, Amar Rab Tavi, Amar Rab Yoshia, my dichtiv, what does it mean? A pasuk in Mishlei. There's a section in Mishlei in Perek Lamed where Shlomo goes through groups of things, three of this and four of that, that he says that different characteristics that they have in common. So now he says, he talks about you have various things that are insatiable. Sholosh Hengelos Isbana. He says three things that are insatiable. They never have enough. And he starts listing Sheol Va'otzer Rocham. You have Sheol, the grave, Va'otzer Rocham, and the narrow womb. The Eretz Le'Sovamayim, and land, which is never farmland, I guess, which is never satisfied with water. So in other words, you have three things over here. The grave is never satisfied with the dead. There's always more people dying and being buried. V'otzer rocham, the beis harechem, is narrow, and it's never satisfied with be'ila. And eretz, and land, agricultural land, like sovamayim, never has enough water. So the question is, v'chimayim and sholo etzer rechem. Why specifically does he mention sho'ol and rechem together? Why particularly those two together? Now, Marsha says, what kind of a question is that? Because he's listing things that are insatiable, so therefore he lists these two things. So Marsha explains, the vote is like this, though. With the land, Shlomo says what it's not satisfied of. It's never loisav amayim, it's never satisfied, it never has enough rainfall. The more it gets, the better for it. As opposed to with Sha'ol v'Oitzer Racham, we're saying, Rashi explains what Sha'ol is never satisfied with, and what the Racham is never satisfied with, but Shlomo doesn't say that in the Pasuk. So therefore, we have to understand them. So why is he mentioning them in that way and not specifying what they're never satisfied with? Eloi Malach. So therefore, says Reb Tovi, it's telling you another point. Ma recha machnesu moitzi. The womb takes in and gives out. It takes in the zera, and later on, 9 months later or 7 months later, a baby is born. Afshoel machnesu moitzi. The same as Shoel, the grave also takes in and gives out. People are buried, but there's also going to be tchias amesim. And now, on top of that, v'alei dvarim kavachoymer. Furthermore, we can make a kavachoymer as far as that. Uma rechem shemachnisin boi b'chashai. Just like with the rechem, how is the baby implanted over there? In secret, in quiet. It's a very private thing. Motzia nimenu b'koyle koylus. And when the baby comes out, there's a huge amount of noise. The mother's labor pains, the baby crying when it's born, so you have quite a lot of noise over there. Well, in the grave where a person is put into it, when a person is buried, there's tremendous noise. There's a lot of loud crying. How much more so that when there's tchias amesim and the body comes out of the grave alive again, there's going to be kolei kolos. There's going to be tremendous noise. You talk of a shofar gadol. So therefore, of joy, but also, yeah, of course, it's going to be of joy, but also the Eibishter is going to be sounding the great shofar, Rashi says. So here's another proof, as we've been discussing off and on through the parak, of people who say that there's no tchias amesim in HaTorah, because here you have a clear proof from this pasuk that it's not so, because that's what he means by she'el v'oitzer rochan. Marsha points out, you know, we had before, at the beginning of the parak, we had the various groups that were challenging the Chachamim about proofs for tchias amesim. And one of them was the Kaser asked, how is it possible a person returns to dust? And the daughter of the Kaser answered that, we have two potters in town. One makes things out of clay, one makes them out of water. And the same way, if the Eibishter can make a person out of a liquid of Zera, how much more so he can remake him out of the solids of dust? So now it's basically, and now Marshall says this is basically along the same lines, that we're comparing one to the other. You have a well-known song also from, I don't know, 30 or 40 years ago, using that from Journeys, I think, or one of those tapes of English songs where you had something along those lines, that portrays two children in the womb. Conversation in the womb, it's called, thank you. So yeah, one of them is saying there's another world, there's a whole other world out there, and the other one is saying no, in here is all there is. And then one of them is born, and he's hearing the one inside is hearing a lot of yelling and screaming, and where's my brother? He must have died, and he doesn't realize. And then meanwhile, the other brother calls out to him. This is the new world that we're coming into. So yeah, same basic idea. Okay. So I'll tell you afterwards. It's a well known song. So you could look it up. The song is called Conversations in the Womb. All right. So the Gemara says Tonad VeElyahu. So now let's talk more about Tchias HaMesim. We learn in a Braisa from the Yeshiva of Eliyahu. Usually we understand that to mean Eliyahu. Now the Be'er Sheva over here on this perek explains that it's not so. It's actually from a Tana named Eliyahu. On the other hand, the Chidah and others disagree with that and say it is actually from Eliyahu HaNavi. There's a Gemara in Ksubas that actually tells about Eliyahu HaNavi coming to one of the Amoraim, Rav Onan, and teaching him. And that's how we have, the Gemara says, that's how we have Seder Eliyahu Rabba and Seder Eliyahu Zutta. So the Chidah says that would be identical with Tonad VeElyahu with the Nissan and other places. Anyway, so he says Tzadikim She'osed HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lach Yosan, the Tzadikim whom Hashem is going to revive in the future, Einam Chozrim La'aforam, they're not going to return to their dust. One way of understanding this is that we're talking, first of all, there's a well-known explanation that there are going to be two stages of Tchias HaMesim. There's going to be an earlier Tchias HaMesim, specifically for great tzaddikim from history, where they're going to come alive before everybody else, and then there's going to be the later Tchias HaMesim for everybody else. So when we say over here, tzaddikim she'asad HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Achi Yosef, then a number of Mephoshim explain, we're talking dafka about that earlier Tchias HaMesim. So now, when we say, Ein Chozrim La'aforam, so there's a couple of possibilities. Rashi says that what it means is that Well, Rashi's wording is that Limos and Mashiach, after they come alive, ain't chozim la'afarim, they're not returning to their dust, meaning in Limos and Mashiach, or Olam Haba, their flesh will remain on them until they live again la'asid lovely. In other words, it sounds like Rashi is saying they will eventually die, but their bodies will remain intact until they come alive again in the second Tefesim Esim. So that's one way of explaining it. A number of Mephoshim explain that it means that Einim Chozim La'Farim, they're not going to return to their dust. They're never going to die B'chlal, as we talked about at the beginning of the Perek. Anyway, there's a Machlokes between the Rambam and the Ramban on the question, what happens eventually after Tchias HaMesim? Is it that eventually people die, and there's going to be a world of only Neshamas, which is how the Rambam holds? That would fit with the Lashon of Rashi over here. On the other hand, we have the Ramban saying that it means that people who are alive at the time of Mashiach, or who come alive at I'm never going to die. That would fit better with the understanding that Einim Chozim La'Farim means they're not going to die b'chlal.
It says Chaim Nitzchim.
It's Chaim Nitzchim, right? Yeah, I mean, we talked about it at the beginning of the Perek, the Alter Rebbe in Torah to Ur, learns like the Ramban, and that became the mainstream understanding in Chassidus that like the Ramban, that there's going to be Chaim Nitzchim, and there's no such thing after Tchias HaMesim of death ever again. Okay. So anyway, so Tanan Eliyahu says, very appropriate for Eliyahu to be saying this, by the way, he himself never died, he himself was Machayim Mason, the son of the woman from Tsarfas. Anyway, Shenema, the Pasuk says, V'hoyahan nishar b'tzion, it will be that the ones who are left in Tzion, v'hanosu b'yishalayim, and the ones who remain in Yerushalayim, kodesh y'omer loy, the kodesh will be said to them, meaning, as the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra, that it means that Siddim Tzadikim Shiyom L'Fneim Kodesh, that in the future, the Tzadikim are going to have Kodesh said in front of them, like we say now, Kodesh, Kodesh, Kodesh to Hashem, then Kodesh will be said to the Tzadikim, so therefore Kodesh Yomolei, Kodesh will be said to them, Kol HaKosov L'Chayim B'Yerushalayim, everybody who is written for life in Yerushalayim. So, what's the point of Kodesh Yomoloi? Ma Kodesh Lo'olam Kayim, the Holy One, Hashem, exists forever. Ahem Lo'olam Kayamin, therefore it means that these tzaddikim, Hanisha B'tzion, Ma'anosib Yerushalayim, are also going to live forever. So again, does it mean Lo'olam Kayim as in live forever, or does it mean that the bodies will remain intact forever until they come alive by the second Tchias HaMesim? The Im Tomar, Maushoa in this connection points out, we've talked about a couple of times previously in this perek, the question that tzaddikim, of course, are going to come alive by Tchias HaMesim. What about the Rishoyim? Are they going to come alive in order to get their punishment? Or we had the Moshal of Antoninus and Rebbe about the Neshama and the Guf being put together. Does it mean they're actually going to come alive? Or does it mean that they're not, and the punishment is going to be precisely the fact that they don't come alive and their Neshamas remain in Gehenna? Maushoa learns like the first way, and he says, therefore, that's why the Pasuk is stressing over here, Kol HaKosov L'Chayim B'Yerushalayim, means the Tzaddikim, who are written right away for Chaya Olam Haba, as opposed to the Rishoyim, they're also going to be alive, but that's not Kodesh U'Amaloi, and they're not the ones who are going to be Kayim La'ad, they're going to be getting up by Tchias HaMesim in order to get their punishment. So Tanad Ve'Eliyahu continues, being Tomar, now you're going to ask, Oysen Elof Shonim She'osed HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Chadosh Behenes Elamai, what about during the 1,000 years when Hashem is going to renew his world? We're going to learn later on in the Perek, and we're going to have a whole sugya about Yemos HaMashiach, we're going to talk about that. Different opinions over there, whether Chad Charuv or Tzrei Charuv, is it 1,000 years, is it 2,000 years? We'll talk about what that means. Al Pi Chassidus, Bez Hashem. Anyway, so there's going to come a point when Hashem is renewing the world, so this world is not going to exist anymore. So now, where are those tzaddikim going to be? Again, if they're alive, then the question is, where are they going to be alive in a Shomas Vigufim? And if they're dead, then where are their Gufim going to be? Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, V'niskav Hashem Levadei by Yemahu. Hashem will be exalted on that day by himself. And a day of Hashem, as we know, so therefore, 1,000 years is one day of Hashem's. So therefore, by Yemahu means a thousand years. So during that time, what's happening to these tzaddikim? So tzaddikim, Mahim Oisim, what are the tzaddikim doing that time? And the answer is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Oysa Lahem Knafayim Knashorim, Hashem is going to make for them wings like eagles, V'shotin Apnei Amayim, and they will flutter over the surface of the water. So in other words, the world itself may not exist in any way that we will be familiar with, but they're going to be able to fly above the water and not be bothered by that. Shenemar, as the Pasuk in fact said, how kainly nira b'homir oritzigemer, that the previous Pasuk says that Hashem is always our ultimate source of trust, and the Pasuk says, how kain, because of that, lo nira b'homir oritzigemer, we won't be afraid when the earth is changing, when Hashem is changing the earth into something new, and the pasuk finishes off with Moitorim Belev Yamim, and when the mountains collapse into the midst of the sea, so Rashi explains what it means is, why are we not afraid? Behomer Oretz of Moitorim, because Belev Yamim, because we're in the midst of the sea, we're flying, we tzaddikim are flying on wings above the sea. The Shema Termi Yeshlan Tsar, but you can argue they would still have Tsar, or that flying has to eventually tire them out. And Marsha points out also that eagles themselves, there's an idea that every so often they lose all their feathers and then they get renewed. You have a pasuk in Tilim, Tiskadish Kaneshem Neuroichi, that your youth will be renewed like the eagle. Or some say a nesher is a different bird, whatever, a prey, whatever. The point is that over time, it eventually loses its feathers and then it gets rejuvenated and has a new usefulness. So therefore, see, so you're going to say that tzaddikim are going to have to go through that whole process as well. Talmud Lema, therefore, another passage says, V'koyve Hashem yachlifu koyach, those who hope in Hashem will renew their strength, so they will constantly have a renewed strength. Yalu eva kaneshorim, they will renew their wings like the eagles. Yorutsu v'lo yigo, they will run and never get tired. Yehu v'lo yofu, they'll go, and they're never going to get worn out. So they're not going to have to go through that metamorphosis like the eagle does. They're always going to constantly be renewed on an ongoing basis so that they're always, So they're always refreshed and able to continue this flying around in Olam HaSel Yonim. At the point when we're saying, when Hashem changes the world and makes that there's not going to be a world that we'll recognize anymore as the Gashmiistic world. So this is what we're talking about. So on the surface, we're talking about after the time of Tchias HaMesim. But again, one way of understanding is we're talking after the first Tchias HaMesim, before the second one, which is for everybody else generally. And another way of looking at it is and then according to Rashi, and then maybe the Rambam, then we're saying those tzaddikim, in fact, are going to die, and there's going to be only their gufim, and then they'll come alive again by the second Tchias HaMesim. As opposed to the other way of looking at it is we're talking about that they're never going to die in the first place, and Einan Chozrim La'Afarim, and they're constantly going to be flying around on their newly gained wings that the Eibishter gives them. Eitz Yosef points out, you know, you have here the Gemara is going to start talking about soon about Mesim Shehechi Yechezkel, and you have people who deny Tchias HaMesim, as we've been learning so far in this Perek. They say Yovsha, they say Obda Sikvasenu, our hope is gone, so they don't believe in Tchias HaMesim. Therefore, in return, the pasuk over here is saying specifically the ones who do believe in Tchias HaMesim are called the Koyvei Hashem, the ones who do hope in Hashem. So therefore, they're the ones who are going to be zeichet to Tchias HaMesim, and they're the ones that Yachlifu Chal Yachatzen. So the Gemara asks, "V'nelaf me'mesim shehech Yechezkel." Now, why can't we learn from the mesim that Yechezkel revived? Meaning, what's the question? Rashi explains the question is that the mesim that Yechezkel revived, as the Gemara is going to say soon, you have they lived, but eventually they died again. So therefore, why can't we learn from that? That the tzaddikim who are brought alive by the mesim are eventually going to die again. That's how Rashi explains the question. Marsha doesn't like that explanation, though, because, okay, so those people we're going to start talking about now, who were those Mesim anyway? They weren't necessarily exactly the cream of the Jewish people. So fine, they could have a Tchias HaMesim, that's only a temporary one. Why should that necessarily apply to the Tzaddikim? So Marsha says, no, what it means is, we've just been going through a couple of blot, off and on, with different Tanoim and Amiroim, bringing proofs from all over Tanakh for Tchias HaMesim. We have a very simple proof. The fact that Yechezkel brought alive Mason, we see that's perfectly possible. So therefore, why don't we learn from that? On the other hand, Ion Yaakov counters that. He says, you know, that's not really a solid thing. Some of the challenges we had before when they were asking the Chachamim is they were saying, for example, the Kaser and others were saying, how could dust come alive again? Well, here it wasn't dust, it was bones. So you could say, fine, Yechezkel brought alive bones. That doesn't show anything about dust. So therefore, so better to go with Rashi's explanation that the question is, that the Gemara is asking, why don't we say that the Tzaddikim lost at Lover are going to be like those dead that Yechezkel revived? Okay.
Was it Elio?
Elio and Elisha both revived the dead, right. But you could argue that's one person, that was a special thing. You can't argue that appears to be a general thing. So the answer is Sovala Kamandama Be'emes Mashal Hoya, because he holds. So again, he or whoever we means according to Rashi Tana De'Eliyahu that we just said about the Tzaddikim Einam Chozrim La'Afarim. According to Maharsha, would have to mean all the Tanoim and Amoraim that we mentioned so far. They would hold like the opinion Be'emes Mashal Hoya that in truth the whole thing was a mashal. There was never actually a Tchias HaMeisim that Yechezkel accomplished. He saw the whole thing in a vision, and he was told to tell it to the Jewish people as a symbol of how the Jewish people are going to be regenerated. The Tanya, as we learn, it's not the only thing, by the way. There's a couple of other things you find in Sefer Yechezkel as well, a couple of other symbolic things that Hashem told them to do, where there are Rishonim, for example, there are Rishonim who learn that some of them at least were only in a vision and not in actual real life. Okay. So the Tanya, we learn in the Braisa. Rabbi Eliezer, I'm a Mason, Shechi Yechezkel, Omder al-Raglehem, Omer Shiro, Mason. Rabbi Eliezer says these Mason that Yechezkel revived, they didn't live for very long. They got up on their feet. They sang Shira, or Mason, and then they died again, because the whole point was to demonstrate to the Jewish people about the truth of Tchias HaMeisim. So, Uma Shira Omru, so what Shira did they say? Hashem Memes Betzedek, Omchai Berachmin. Hashem puts to death with justice, and Hashem brings alive with Rachmin. Why dafka that Shira? Maharsha says, the Gemara is going to talk about further on, who were these Mason anyway? And one opinion is that these are actually people who denied Tchias HaMeisim, so they don't even deserve Tchias HaMeisim. We said in the Mishnah, somebody who denies Tchias HaMeisim is somebody who's not going to have Tchias HaMeisim. So therefore, Hashem killed them, but Tzedek, with justice. But then he brings them alive, berachmim, purely with rachmim, because they don't even really deserve it, and Hashem is just doing it in order to demonstrate that he has the power to do it. Rabbi Yeshua, in a shira zu amru, Rabbi Yeshua says they said a different shira, taken from the words of the pasuk that Hannah says in her tefillah, Hashem memes umachaya, Hashem puts to death and brings alive, murdered sha'ol, he brings down into the grave, vayoal, and he brings up again. So this was Hannah's tefillah talking about Tchias HaMeisim, when she says murdered Shaul by Yoal, she's also referring to Adas Korach, who were, particularly B'nai Korach, who went down into Gehenna and came out of it. So now, Maharsha explains, Rabbi Yeshua is saying that these are people that they weren't kofer b'tchias HaMeisim, but they did other averis. So now Hashem brought them alive, and they lived long lives until they died naturally. That would be the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseder, the Gemara is going to say, see. So therefore, they're saying the Shira, Hashem memes umachaya, murdered sha'ol vayoal, that these are, Hashem already previously caused them to die prematurely. Now Hashem is machaya. Later on, murdered sha'ol, Hashem will bring them down into the grave after they live normal lives. Vayoal, and Hashem will yet bring them up again, la'osid lavay. The Braisa continues. Rabbi Yehuda im emes moshal hoya. Rabbi Yehuda says, truth, it was a moshal. Amalei Rabbi Nechemya, but Rabbi Nechemya says, what kind of a lashon is that? Emes lama moshal, the moshal lama emes. Why are you saying like that? Emes means it was actually true. Moshal means it was only a moshal. Ela be emes moshal hoya. Rather, what you need to say is be emes, in truth, moshal hoya. It's clear that moshal hoya. Now, there is an expression in the Gemara and some other places that says whenever it says something is be'emes, means it's actually halach l'moshe misinai. So the Sefer Ikrim actually says that since you have Reb Nechemya saying that, then that would be the final statement on the subject that was in fact a moshal and not something that happened in real life. On the other hand, many Meforshim disagree with that, and in fact the Chassam Sofer says that in fact why did Rabbi Yehuda use the word emes moshal hoya, which is an unusual way of saying it. He says, fakir, what Rabbi Yehuda meant by that is emes, it actually happened in truth, in real life, but it wasn't just for the sake of being machaya, these individual people, it was moshal hoya, it was in order to serve as a moshal for the whole Jewish people, to take a moshal from it about Tchias HaMeisim and the fact that the Jewish people have a future. So therefore, fakir, to point to that, it means Rabbi Yehuda is saying it most definitely did happen, but it was meant not just legufoy, but also as a moshal. What? The fact that they came alive, yeah. This is the Chassam Sofer says that. Another opinion, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yosher Rabbi Yisag Lili Omer, Mesim Shehechi Yechezkel Olu La'Eretz Yisrael. These Mesim that Yechezkel revived, they went up to Eretz Yisrael afterwards. The Nosu Noshim, and they got married. Vahilidu Bonim Ubonis, and they fathered sons and daughters. They had normal family lives, and then eventually lived out their lives and died again. Omer Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseder, Raglav, at that point, when he said that, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseder got up on his feet, the Omar, and he says, Anim ibnei b'neim, I am actually descended from some of those mason that Yechezkel revived, the halolot tefillin, sheniach li avi abba mehen, and these are the tefillin that my grandfather left me as a Yerusha from them. Rabbi Yehuda ben Seira lived a few hundred years after Yechezkel, but he still had tefillin that went back to them. There is a very interesting vert on this, that, like this, you have the famous Gemara, and you have the famous story in Gemara Pesachim, where there was a goy who pretended to be a Yid, and every year he would go on Aliyah L'Regel and pretend that he's a Yid and get invited to eat from a Korban Pesach. And one time he boasts of it to Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, and Rabbi Yehuda, how is he gonna trap him? So he tells him, next time ask for the Aliyah, they're not giving you the fat tail, they're keeping you from the best part. The next time the guy goes to Yerushalayim, he asks for the Aliyah, they realize something is up, they start investigating, they find he's a goy and they kill him. And they sent a message to Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, Ashrecha, Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, that you live in Nitzivin, in faraway Bavel, and in the north of Bavel. Nowadays, Nitzivin is someplace in northern Iraq or southern Turkey or something, and yet your net is spread all the way to Yerushalayim. So now you have the famous question, well, why didn't Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra himself go on Aliyah L'Regel and expose the guy? So Tosfos points out that one thing is maybe he didn't own land in Eretz Yisrael, and a person who doesn't own land in Eretz Yisrael is not chayiv in Aliyah L'Regel. So then they ask a famous question on this: doesn't every yid have a portion in Eretz Yisrael, which even has implications lahalacha as far as a prusbul and other things? And so there's an interesting answer on that. The Gemara is going to bring, and we'll learn next time, Be'ez Hashem, different opinions who these people were that Yechezkel revived. One opinion is that they were the Bnei Ephraim who left Mitzrayim 30 years before Yetzias Mitzrayim. Well then, they weren't from Yotzei Mitzrayim, they weren't from Bori Haaretz, so therefore they didn't get a portion in Eretz Yisrael. Only those who, as we learned in Baba Basra, those who left Mitzrayim at Yetzias Mitzrayim, or those who came into Eretz Yisrael a generation later, are entitled to portions in Eretz Yisrael. These Bnei Ephraim are neither. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra's ancestors don't have a portion in Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, Itaka has no land in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore that would explain what Tosfos says, why he's potter from Aliyah L'Regel, and therefore instead of going himself, then instead he came up with a strategy to get the guy to expose himself.
Is he associated with the Bnei
Becerra who gave up the Nesiyas to Hillel? It's a good question. Very likely there's some kind of relationship, but I don't know if we know for sure. Kohanim and Levim at least have Ari Miklat. That's at least considered their own land in Eretz Yisrael. Mind you, there are a couple of different Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerras as well. Here, the one from this story lived in the time of the Beis Hamikdash. We find another one who was a Talmud of Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer, which would place him in the generation, two generations or so after the Churban. And yeah, it seems like there were at least two or three different Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerras, and there's also Rabbi Yeshua ben Becerra. Yeah, again, are they related to the Bnei Becerra of Hillel's times? Very likely, but I don't know if we know anything for sure.
Did he bring any proof?
No, but if he's showing them these are the tefillin that I inherited from them, then he's obviously he's one of the chachamim. He's not going to be lying about it. So how the other chachamim would answer it, I don't know. But in any case, he has his proof that it was a real live thing. All right, Yom Yom Mashiach Gola for Choftes Menachemov. So you have a pasuk, it's an aftorah for fast days. Koyamar Hashem, so says Hashem, shimru mishpat, guard justice, vasut tzedaka and yut tzedaka, ki kroiva yeshuasi lovai, because my salvation is very near, but tzidkosi lehigolis, and my tzedaka to you is very close to be revealed. So what does that mean? Tzedaka is going to be revealed. The whole golos was in truth a thing of tzedaka. The Chazal tell us tzedakah also HaKadosh Baruch Hu shepizru in Lebeinu Umos, that Hashem did a tzedakah scattering us among the nations, because as the Gemara explains, this way if Jews are being persecuted in one place, then the Jews in other places can help them. B'gashmias of Aruchmias. So nowadays we just have a munah on that. We believe it, but it's hard for us to understand logically. But then when Mashiach comes, Oid HaShem ki anaf to be, we'll thank Hashem that he was angry at us, then this hidden good that was in Yisurim of Golos will be revealed, and therefore we'll actually see how the Jewish people, through that, was zeichah to the Gilui of Asid, so that's the Tzidkosi Lehi Golos.
Why did the Jews in the
Because that was right after the Churban Bayis tradition. There were a lot of people who were discouraged and thought, that's it, that's the end of Jewish life. We'll learn about it more tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. We can talk about it more, Be'ez Hashem. Continuing with topics of tefillin. We were learning yesterday about making a bracha on borrowed tefillin, and the Alter Rebbe had pointed out a distinction between that, that's what Abba hadn't pointed out, but in the footnotes over here, it points out that there's a certain difference with the talis. Most of the time, when you borrow somebody's talis, you do, in fact, make a bracha, because you have the din that the person is not going to mind that you're borrowing his talis. But you do have, there are certain cases and that we learned about in Hilchos Tzitzis, where it's without the das of the other person, and in fact, you're not necessarily required to make a bracha, although you could. Meanwhile, with tefillin, though, the point is different, and you say the bracha regardless, and as we learned yesterday, in principle, that even if the tefillin are stolen, midaraisa, a person would be yoy. With it. More on the dinner of tefillin then. The minhag ha'olam is not to take off tefillin until after uvol tzion, until after the kedusha of uvol tzion. There is, in fact, an idea that near the end of uvol tzion, we say, v'lasis etzonio v'ovdei b'lev avshalim, Tosfos brings in a couple of places from Yerushalmi that they used to have in Eretz Yisrael a minhag to make a bracha when they took off their tefillin, especially when they took them off right before nightfall, because you can't wear tefillin at night, as we'll eventually learn. So they would make a bracha lishmer chukav. So therefore, so it's brought that those words in uvol tzion, lishmer chukach ba'olam hazeh, is a vestige of that bracha. And in fact, I think they say that Rebbe would touch his tefillin at that time, the same way as we touch by Pesach, as Yerdach and by other times. Anyway, the Alter Rebbe continues.
You don't take it off.
So the first, the Alter Rebbe is saying that Tzad Halacha, you can take it off until you can take it off after the Kedusha over there. But then he continues. Yesh Misha Omer Derech Kabbalah. Some say based on Kabbalah that you have to have three Kadeshim in tefillin. So that would be the one before Baruch Hu, the one after Shemoneh Esrei, and the third one, and the third one would be after Uvol Tzion. So therefore, you shouldn't take them off, according to that, until after the Kedusha Uvol Tzion. Meanwhile, the Arizal wouldn't take them off until after Va'alkein Nekavalacha. And then you have some people have the minhag not to even take them off until after Kaddish Yosin. So in Sefer Menhagim, it says that you should wear them until after Ach Tzadikim. And then you continue wearing them for tefillin, and then you take them off and put on them many times.
If they wear two pairs at the same time,
one of the fascists is the same thing. But here we're talking about if a person is wearing first lashes, then many times. Okay. And then we'll have in subsequent sifim, we'll talk about different other times when you take it off in terms of other things that are in terms of Rosh Chodesh and other things like that.
Thank you.